Crosby, and you're listening to the Mean Joe Grizzly Podcast.
Hey, it's Tom Matthews from Return of the Living Dead and Friday the 13th, Part 6, to name a few, and you're listening to the Mean Joe Grizzly Podcast. Enjoy.
Let me introduce myself. I'm Joe Grizzly, bitch.
What up, Mean Militia? I'm Mean Joe Grizzly, and when I'm not trying to prevent a full-scale invasion by shape-shifting aliens, creating the most devastating weapon in human history, or hanging out with my group of friends while we take turns passing around a haunted hand like it was a joint, I'm at the Grizzly Cave, watching movies, reading comics, listening to metal, and of course, crushing beers. And on this episode, I'm going to be bringing y'all a trio of reviews ranging from the latest Marvel mid-piece to a potential horror classic, and even to a masterfully crafted biopic. But before we get started, I want y'all to take a second and follow the show on all social media platforms, as well as joining my Mean Militia on the show's official Facebook group by clicking the links down in the episode description. Also, don't forget to subscribe to the show on whatever platform y'all listen on. By doing this, y'all support the show and help me continue to talk to y'all about all forms of badassery. So, let's get started by talking about Marvel's Secret Invasion. This is Grizzly Grade Reviews. After a period of self-exile, Nick Fury returns to Earth from the space station Saber to help stop a covert hostile takeover of the planet by the very aliens he promised to help decades ago. So, I did not hate this, but I didn't necessarily love it or like it either. And part of it has to do with my bias and knowledge of the comic story it's based on. Secret Invasion was an event that took place after the superhero Civil War and World War Hulk. And Iron Man was director of S.H.I.E.L.D. and the Superhero Registration Act was in full swing and everything had seemingly settled down. And then Elektra dies while fighting the Hand. And yeah, this seems like a monumental tragedy, until Spider-Woman Jessica Drew calls Tony Stark and other leaders of the superhero community together to where Elektra's body was being held. And to the shock of everyone, it wasn't Elektra at all, but a Skrull masquerading as Elektra. And this kicked off this crazy event. An event full of paranoia, twists and turns, huge breakout battles, and a mystery of who the Skrull Queen was. And sounds awesome, right? Do you think they did this in the show? Hell no. But did they even get close? I mean, did they like dumb it down or anything like that? No, not even. In fact, they barely even touched on the essence of the story. And that's so disappointing. Which, when this show was announced, I never once thought that it was going to work as a TV show. It needed to be a phase on its own. And judging by how this phase is going right now, it seems like Marvel should have done this instead. It would have been a lot better path to go with. They could have brought this out in the aftermath of Infinity War, and I feel like it would have led to great things. And I'm gonna make a video, or I'm either gonna make an episode talking about what I would have done instead of what they are doing now. And it'll be just like the State of the MCU video or episode that I did 2 years ago now. But what did they get right? What did they get wrong? We'll start out with the positives. So at times, this is a pretty decent political thriller. It never really dives full blown into it, kind of like how Captain America: The Winter Soldier was, because to me that's perfection. But I digress. I can go down that rabbit hole, but I feel like that this was trying to do that, but it just didn't work. They were missing something. Probably the Russo brothers. I don't think they were involved in this, but either way, it shows that they wasn't involved. The camera work is pretty good. And I know I sound like I'm splitting hairs, but the camera work really was pretty well done here. And it's a good looking show. It doesn't look bad at all at most of the time. And speaking of that, most of the special effects are good. And I'm using that word most. I'm going to talk about in the negative section about what was not good. And everybody is talking about it online. But for the most part, the makeup and the special effects were good. Particularly on the Super Skrull and in the final battle. It was pretty good. Most of it. And regardless of the material that these actors were given, the performances were pretty good. Ben Mendelsohn as Talos was good. Ben Mendelsohn's good in just about everything he does. He kind of plays the same character in almost everything, but he's still a pretty solid actor. Sam Jackson's good, even though I'll get to what's going on with his character in the negative section. I still think he did a very good job. And Kingsley Benadar. Kingsley Benadar, who played Gravik, the main villain of this show, he did pretty good. I can say that I totally bought into the madness that he was experiencing from being lied to or being misled to do someone's dirty work, and to turn around and not be promised what you were, not be given what you were promised. So I think that he did a pretty good job as a villain. Was he like Kingpin, or was he like Thanos, or even like Kilgrave, or any of the really good villains of the MCU? Hell no, he was nowhere close. But he didn't do a bad job. And the show is not necessarily bad. It's not. It's a very watchable show. It does drag at times, but it's not a bad show. So I just want to make that perfectly clear that the next section's going to get rough, because it's going to sound like I'm shitting all over this show. I did not hate this show. I just didn't necessarily think that it was as good as it should have been or could have been. So I want to say that before I move on to the negatives, which brings me to the negatives. First and foremost, they fail at giving us a decent adaptation of this classic story. Now, I know what everyone that's not comic fans are saying. Oh, y'all want everything to be just like the comics. Oh, that's not what I want. And that's not what most comic fans want. Even though Disney has more money than most countries and they should be able to do that, that's not what all comic fans want. But what they do want is a respectable adaptation, especially when a studio is capable of delivering one. And this just wasn't it. They didn't even have the paranoia aspect of the story, where no one knew who was a Skrull and who wasn't. Even the people who were Skrulls, that's the thing about the story. The way that the Secret Invasion takes place, and what was so thrilling about it is that the Skrulls that were disguised as superheroes, they actually thought they were the superheroes until they were activated. Like almost like a sleeper cell type thing. So they truly did not know they were even infiltrators. It was so damn good, and they never hit on that in here. And quite frankly, this show's success was determined years ago when they released Captain Marvel, and they made the Skrulls a benevolent race, or a race of people who were quote, victims. The Skrulls have never been victims in the comics, guys. They were always the asshole aliens. I mean, the Kree aren't much better, but the Kree at times would do good things. The Skrulls are always assholes. They are never good in the comics. They're always dicks. Always. And Marvel screwed the pooch in Captain Marvel by even making them this victim race that lost their planet because of the Kree and blah, blah, blah. Because that completely destroys the entire narrative between this Kree and Skrull war, which is something that I cannot get into right now, or this video will be hours long. So we'll digress on that, but they never even captured the essence of the story and never gave us any kind of mystery as to there was never who is the leader. We knew who the leader of the invasion was from the get-go. In the comics, we had to figure out who the Skrull Queen was, because she was masquerading around as somebody that nobody knew. And I'm sorry, but that's a missed opportunity, especially when you had Emilia Clarke. She would have been a perfect Skrull Queen. Perfect. And they didn't use her. And I don't understand the decision making sometimes here recently, a lot of the decision making that goes on at Disney and Marvel. It's like they don't want to print money. It's like they want to just put out this minimal effort garbage that they've been giving us. And now, I don't think that everything that they've given us since Endgame has been bad. I think No Way Home was great. I thought Doctor Strange the Multiverse of Madness was great. Shang-Chi was pretty good. I thought that Black Panther Wakanda Forever was good, and Guardians of the Galaxy 3 was good. But everything else has been pretty bad, especially these Disney Plus shows. They've just been blah and not pushing anything forward, which brings me to my next point. This show just seemed pointless. I don't know where it ties into the multiverse story. Yeah, maybe that'll be revealed later, but I don't know how it's gonna tie in. It just was a thing that happened and probably won't ever get talked about again, because there's no indication that it will ever be talked about again. Also, it has pointless characters. I don't give a shit about Nick Fury's Skrull wife that was random as hell, and I never once bought into their romance, ever. Anybody that says they did, they're lying. I felt no emotional connection between those two characters. Which also brings me to the point of Nick Fury. They neutered that character. I mean, I don't even understand the I don't even understand the narrative of making him the way they made him. Like, I don't get making him soft. I don't get making him a hopeless man. They could have just said, you know what, Nick Fury's been up in space in the space station Saber, playing his role as the man on the wall, the one that keeps threats from ever happening. Because that's what Nick Fury does. And he's an asshole. And he used the Skrulls to do his dirty work. And now it's biting him in the ass. That would have made so much more sense than, oh, he's just lost his touch. Because when the blip happened, he didn't have to worry about nothing anymore. Because he got blipped out of existence. And he finally had peace. That's lame. And I hated it. I hated it so damn much. And probably the one glaring thing that everyone's been making fun of online is most of the CGI and special effects in the show are good. I don't really care what anybody has to say about that. Most of them were good, but I'd be damned if there wasn't one that was so freaking bad. And that was in the slight spoilers. I know y'all have seen it, though. Everybody that's paying attention to the MCU has had to have seen this gift online about this horrible CGI Drax arm that Emilia Clarke's character grows at the final battle, and she like flexes. Oh, it looks like fucking shit. It's hilarious. I mean, it's really bad. But what's crazy is everything else up to that point was pretty damn good. Gravik is essentially the Super Skrull in the show. And his final form, when he has all the powers, is pretty damn good. It looks good. It just didn't work because they never captured that story. So I could sit back and I can bitch about this all day, but what is my final verdict on this show? I don't hate it. I don't love it, but it is watchable. It's just somewhere in the middle, and I think it's got decent performances. I think most of the special effects and makeup are good, and I think it's something to watch. So, with that being said, I'm giving Marvel's Secret Invasion a 3 out of 5, and it is Grizzly Gray guaranteed. Another hard, hard show to review, because I don't think it deserves a negative review, but I don't think it deserves a good one either. Disney has got to do better. And with the Marvel's movie coming out soon, I just don't see that happening. That movie looks like a pile of shit. But don't worry, I will be reviewing it. Now, let's move on to Oppenheimer. So, Oppenheimer is the story of physicist Robert Oppenheimer and his journey from being a mediocre, stressed out student to the essential leader of the greatest science project in the history of mankind, the Manhattan Project. And this movie was phenomenal. Doesn't have problems? Yes, it does, but they're very minute. It's funny that this movie was released, and of course a lot of people started talking more about the Manhattan Project and all that. So, obviously, I knew a little bit about this from just by my general education throughout life and at school and in college, but I dove a little bit deeper and was researching this a little bit, and it's a fascinating story. And one of the things that I listened to was, and I recommend everybody go check it out, the last podcast on the left. I don't know if you've ever heard of those guys. Those guys are funny as shit. And if you want to hear a pretty good account on the Manhattan Project, go listen to their series. It's like a 6-part series that it's about an hour and a half with each one. And I know that sounds like a lot, but listen to it while you're driving. It's pretty interesting, and they make it hilarious. And they do a pretty good job at their research. It's a great podcast to listen to. True crime. They talk about cryptids, weird stuff in history. Check them out. They're pretty good. But their series on the Manhattan Project is phenomenal. But the thing is that Christopher Nolan just continues to prove that he's one of the best modern directors ever. And his range with what he does as a director is just astonishing. And I feel like it doesn't get talked about enough. People talk about how good of a director he is, but his range is unbelievable. I mean, this guy has done true crime movies like Insomnia, which is phenomenal. Mystery movies like Memento. He's done superhero films, the Dark Knight trilogy. He's done sci-fi / non-fiction type movies with Interstellar, now a nonfiction biopic about Robert Oppenheimer. I mean, he done this mind-blowing, mind-bending science fiction story with Inception. This guy has range. The guy's just great. He's just a damn good director. And there was a question asked of him recently if he would ever direct the James Bond franchise. And guys, if he does that, I'll go straight back to James Bond. James Bond kind of lost me, kind of like how Mission Impossible lost me, because the movies just started being the same damn movie over and over again. But if Christopher Nolan goes back, I will 100% be going and going back and watching James Bond. But what are the positives of this movie? Obviously, the cast is phenomenal, and the standout being Cillian Murphy. The guy's just developed into this phenomenal actor. He's good in everything he does, from Peaky Blinders to this. I remember seeing him for the first time in 28 Days Later, the British zombie apocalypse movie. He was phenomenal in that. I knew the guy was going to be great. I was just waiting on him to get some traction. And I feel like that Peaky Blinders and now this has now catapulted him into stardom. The guy is one of the best actors out there now. Looking forward to seeing him do other roles too. The surprise performance to me was Robert Downey Jr. I'm going to be honest with you. I had no idea he was going to be in this movie. They kind of make him this charismatic character at first, and then slowly towards the end you find out a lot about the guy. And him playing Peter Strauss, that was brilliant. I had no idea that he was even in this movie, and it paid off. I'm so glad that they brought him on board, because Robert Downey Jr. is a phenomenal actor too. I know everybody wants to see him as Iron Man, but he's always been a good actor. Always. And it was good to see him show off his acting chops in this as well. This movie is beautiful. The way it's shot, the colors, there's these shots throughout the movie with Oppenheimer essentially seeing the physics in a visual level. Like in his brain, he can see these reactions with electrons, neutrons, and stuff. Not that he has like a superpower or anything, but he's visualizing it in his head, and we get to see that. And some of those shots are just beautiful. That going hand in hand with the good camera work, just gorgeous. It was a pretty detailed look into Oppenheimer's life and the Manhattan Project. I love the fact that when it gets to the political part of the whole thing with Oppenheimer, I love how they were steadfast, and Nolan did not change Oppenheimer's political stance, because for the longest time in the public, from what I've read, I obviously wasn't around back then, Oppenheimer was always branded as a communist and a Russian spy. And although he had friends and family and a lover and a couple and a wife that were involved in the neo-communist party in America around that time, he never was a part of it. And he never completely bought into those ideas. He was always a New Deal Democrat. And normally I don't talk about politics on this show, but I love how they didn't taint his legacy I'm just glad they did not put out false information that, yeah, Oppenheimer was a communist. I'm glad they didn't do that. I felt like that was the right thing to do, and it was the truth. And I commend Nolan for doing that. I also love how they brought in all these other scientists, and Josh Hartnett being in this was kind of a surprise as well. He did phenomenal as well. But the bringing together all these scientists and showing how much work it took to create the atomic bomb, it was just phenomenal how Nolan did this. Now, it mainly focuses on Los Alamos, but there was more sites than just this. I believe there was four sites altogether throughout America of these towns that just got popped up out of nowhere, and they were research facilities for the atomic bomb. I thought that was pretty good how they focused on just Oppenheimer, because the movie would have been even longer if they would have focused on all those others. They mention a few of them, but they don't go into full detail. As far as the negatives of the movie, there's not very many. It's got some pacing issues. There was some time where I felt like they were spending a little too much time on certain things, and they could have cut them out and it wouldn't have made any difference. The movie at times moves like lightning, and then at times it crawls. So it does have some pacing issues. And the movie is fucking long. It's 3 hours and some change. And I don't feel like it needed to be that long. It could have, at least 15 minutes or 20 minutes probably could have got trimmed out of this movie. But it's a very, very small gripe. And the last real negative that I have about the movie is they didn't really show too much of Oppenheimer's villainous side. And what I mean by that is I'm not here to taint the legacy of Robert Oppenheimer. I mean, his legacy speaks for itself. Yes, he was part of the Manhattan Project. Yes, it created the atomic bomb, one of the most devastating weapons in human history. And he was a theoretical physicist that brought his theories into reality. The guy was a brilliant man. Was his work used to create weapons? Did he help that? Yes, he did. The villainous side that I felt like they didn't show enough of, they only hinted at it, was his arrogance and his need to want to be recognized for what he did. They touched on his regret and how, my God, what have I done, after they dropped the bomb on Hiroshima and Nagasaki, because then he spent a lot of his life afterwards trying to prevent something like that from ever happening again. But I do feel like they could have showed a little more of his villainous side, because in all reality, from what history tells us about him, he was kind of an asshole. But I digress. The movie is phenomenal. I recommend everybody go see it. The hype is real. I look forward to see whatever Christopher Nolan's going to be doing next, whatever he's going to be doing. This guy could make a documentary about freaking lemurs, and I'll watch it, because the guy's just such a good director. But with all that being said, it's a damn good biopic. It's to me, it stands out from other biopics because of its historical accuracy and the sheer magnitude of how good the cast was, and the people that they gathered and where they placed them in the film was just phenomenal. So with all that being said, Oppenheimer gets a 4 out of 5, and it is 100% Grizzly grade guaranteed. Go out and see it. It's damn good. Now let's move on to Talk to Me. So Talk to Me is an Australian horror film that tells the story of a group of teens that are in possession of a disembodied porcelain hand that seemingly allows the user to become temporarily possessed. And as always, the situation gets out of control and it leads to grim events. And I just got to say, this movie was phenomenal. And I knew next to nothing about this movie when I went to go see it. I watched that first initial trailer, but that was it. And one day, I was saying, you know what, I want to go see a movie. And I didn't have enough time to go see Oppenheimer. I ended up going to see Oppenheimer this past weekend. But I was like, you know, there's a new horror movie out there that I'm starting to see buzz about. Let me go check it out. And it was Talk to Me. And I did no research on this movie before I went. Like I said, I pretty much went in blind other than seeing that trailer. And then I found out afterwards that it was directed by two YouTubers. And I'm going to butcher their last name, but Danny and Michael Filippo. Apparently they have a huge YouTube channel. I'm not familiar with their channel. I don't even know what kind of content they put out, but well done, guys. Well done. I don't know who you are. I'm extremely proud of what you accomplished here. To direct, for being a, this is your directing debut and your partial writing debut. You hit this one out of the park, guys. Good job. And I'm glad that you got that opportunity, and I look forward to seeing whatever opportunities y'all get in the future, because I would actually love to see y'all do more horror films. And not to get into the whole SAG and the writer's strike and all that, but it's something to think about that two YouTubers directed and wrote one of the best horror films and probably the last. It's definitely a top 25 horror film of the last 10 to 15 years. You could definitely put this in the top 25 of the last 15 to 20 years. And this is the first time they put pen to paper for a script, and it got picked. That's something to think about, writers, while you're out there striking. Y'all need to step y'all's game up. And that's all I'm going to say about the writer's strike. But this movie was... this movie really caught me by surprise. And this movie grabs you from the beginning frame and does not let go. It's... and a lot of times when you have a horror film that is that does that, it's either... it doesn't let you go because attention is always on, or it just gets you in a grip where you're just so glued in to the story and the characters and what the message is of the movie and trying to figure out what's going on. And it's definitely the latter. Starting out with the... Let's start out with the pros, because I don't want to reveal too much about this movie. I want people to actually go see this movie because it's really good. And I'm not going to be talking about any spoilers in this movie, about this movie. I'm just going to be giving my positives and my negatives and my final verdict, and I'm going to hope that y'all go see it because it's that good. So as far as the positives go, and this might not sound like a positive, but this is a heavy, heavy, heavy movie. Very, very emotional, and it's done very well. This is something that's kind of in the trailer, so it's not going to be a spoiler for you, and plus you find out pretty soon in the movie. This movie deals with suicide aftermath and how loved ones have to deal with the loss of a family member or loved one that committed suicide. And it really grabs you emotionally with that from the get-go. And if you don't feel something by the end, I feel like you just either didn't get it, or you don't have any emotion, or you could just tune stuff like that out. But when I go see movies, I get immersed in the movie most of the time. If it's a decent movie, I get immersed in it. If it's not, then I'm just out. I'm completely taken out of the movie from the get-go. But this movie had me intrigued from the get-go, and it grabbed me with the heavy, heavy tone of emotion that it establishes from the very beginning. The cast is great. Sophie Wilde she's the main character of Mia, and her acting is phenomenal. Majority of the cast is good in this movie. They're all down to earth. Most of them are down to earth characters that are very relatable, especially if you have ever been a teenager, and every damn one of us has been or currently is. I think that the scares in the movie, or the uneasiness or unsettling parts of the movie, are earned, and they're done very, very well. Like, this isn't your typical jump scare movie. There's not really any jump scares in the movie, in my opinion. They're just well done scares. Like, kind of like how Hereditary had the people in the backgrounds at all times and how just unsettling and creepy it was. This movie does that very well too. Like it really takes cues from that. Not that it copies or emulates it. It just does a good job of reiterating that same technique. There is some shockingly violent parts with really good effects in this movie. Like, it comes out of nowhere. You do not see it coming anytime it happens. And it is gruesome. And even the point where the choreography with all the actors, when they actually use this haunted object of this hand, and the way they contort and move their bodies, fantastic. They don't just phone it in. They actually act like they are completely and utterly possessed by whatever spirit has taken them over. Which brings me into the concept. The concept is so damn unique and such a good, original, refreshing take on the cursed or haunted object movie. Like, to make it into, like, and this isn't really a spoiler, but to make it like a party game, and to make it like euphoric when you use it, like almost like they're passing around a joint or they're all getting high, and this object kind of gives them the same thing. So it kind of leads to it getting out of control because they can't stop fucking with this object. And normally in a movie, that would be considered a trope where they keep doing the same thing that keeps bringing them all this misfortune and this, that, and the other. Quit fucking with it. Well, the way they do it in this movie, it just makes sense. It makes sense that a dumb teenager, after tasting their first taste of drugs, would just keep going back to it because it's fun to be high when you're a teenager. And I thought that was a great job of making that so unique without it becoming just this shining example of a horror trope. And I feel like the message that the movie gives with how people deal with grief and how people deal with suicide and the aftermath of a loved one committing suicide was very touching and very realistic. You feel completely, I don't know if anybody's ever dealt with that before, but there's an emptiness and a kind of void in your life after someone you really care about commits suicide. It's something that is very hard to explain, and this movie kind of explains it pretty well. And the ending of the movie is great, in my opinion. Wonderful way to end a horror movie, especially this horror film. Now, to move on to the negatives, I don't have many negatives. One, the pacing at the very end of this movie, what kind of made it feel like it was all over the place at the very end until the phenomenal ending. Like, I'd say about the last 10 to 5 minutes of the movie, it kind of feels like the pacing's all over the place and it just makes it feel jumbled up. But then the very end is just great. And there is one character in the movie that just annoyed the piss out of me. Every time they were on the screen, I was like, man, I hope they die quick or they get the fuck out of here and I don't have to see them again, because the character was just an asshole and I don't like asshole characters, even though they're necessary to a plot most of the time. This character just took that to a different level, and that was the character of Haley. Did not like that character at all. From just being a complete bitch when it was unnecessary. Like, she's one of those characters that walks the line between being a bully and just the asshole friend you have. But for me, I would never hang out with someone like this. I definitely wouldn't hang out with someone who, there's even one scene, and this isn't spoiling anything, there's one scene where she flicks a lit cigarette at her, quote, friend, and it hit, and it's in a house that's not their house, and they just fucking leave the lit cigarette wherever it lands. I'm like, what an asshole. She annoyed me. I don't know if y'all could tell. Like, I would never hang out with someone like that. And I would hope that people like that would grow up to not be assholes. I hope they've learned their lessons and be like, man, I was a real shitbag when I was a kid. Hopefully Haley does that. But anyway, those are really the only complaints that I have. I really like this movie. I actually can't wait to revisit it, and I will be adding this to my collection when it comes out on physical media. A24 is one of those companies that if they bring out 10 movies, 5 of them's going to be phenomenal, and then the other 5 are going to be or they're going to be piles of shit. And this is definitely one of the ones that was good. You got to really take everything pretty lightly when an A24 movie is getting buzzed, because it's either overhyped bullshit that a bunch of film snobs say is the best thing since sliced bread, and you watch it and you're like, what the fuck was that? Or it's either, man, this really is a good movie. There's rarely an in-between with A24 movies. So, but this one hit it right. And I completely recommend it. So, with its good performances by the cast, its creepy atmosphere, its solid, heartfelt message, phenomenal ending, and unique concept all around, I'm going to be giving Talk to Me a 4.5 out of 5. And it is absolutely grizzly grade guaranteed. Might be the best horror film of this year so far. We'll see what happens at the end of the year when we do our end of the year review. But right now, I think it's the best one that's been released so far that I've seen. Go check it out. And with that, we bring another episode to an end. Thank you all so much for your continued support. Without y'all, the show isn't possible. If you like this episode, please consider subscribing to the show wherever you listen to podcasts. And don't forget to click the links in the description below to follow me on all social media platforms. I also want to give a shout out to Carl Casey at White Bat Audio. Go check that guy's music out, man. He is on Apple Music, Spotify, YouTube. The guy's music's phenomenal. His music is the music I use for my outros and intros and all the background music. I use his music in almost all of my TikTok videos and stuff too. Guy just does phenomenal work. Phenomenal synth wave from in all varieties. Just check out his work. We got a lot of stuff coming out in August too. August is probably just as heavy as July was and as May was, and I didn't get to cover nearly as much as I wanted to cover in those 2 months, but I'm gonna once again try to do that. We got a lot though. We got Voyage of the Dementor, we got TMNT, Mutant Mayhem, a bunch of stuff is coming out, so stay tuned for that. I'm probably gonna be watching some TV shows too, try to get y'all a review on The Twisted Metal Show on Peacock, which I'm a few episodes in now, and I really enjoy it. You got the 3rd season of The Witcher out. That one's pretty good as well. And a couple other things. So just stay tuned. We'll see what happens with that. But until next time, remember, I'm Joe Grizzly, bitch.